Willkommen zu einer weiteren Episode von Lerne Social Media. Heute habe ich die Head of Social Media von Wirecard bei mir, und zwar Polina Medvedeva. Da Polina in erster Linie Englisch spricht, wird das Interview auf Englisch stattfinden und wir haben einige spannende Themen dabei. Natürlich konzentrieren wir uns heute mehr auf B2B und wie du als B2B-Anbieter, also Business to Business, Social Media richtig nutzt. Wir reden auch darüber, wie ein Social Media Team aufgebaut ist und wie Influencer Marketing im B2B-Bereich funktioniert. Auch natürlich ein Thema, wie sollten Unternehmen mit Problemen heutzutage umgehen? Und dann reden wir noch fiktiv darüber, wenn Polina sich jetzt selbstständig machen würde, wie die ersten Schritte wären. Ja, wie sollte der Start der eigenen Produkte aussehen? Wie bestimmt man den optimalen Preis? Aber jetzt starten wir doch direkt rein. So, welcome, Polina.
Thank you for having me. Thank you very much.
What I love to do always at the beginning of a podcast is to ask you, first of all, who you are and what do you do?
Yeah. So my name is Polina. I am a social media manager and currently I'm head of social media in Wirecard. I have been in social for the past 7 years. Wow. And currently I'm really figuring out what to do next and what should be the next steps.
Interesting. So how did you start? I mean, 7 years... It's 2013.
Yeah.
It was just the time when Instagram was rising. Right. I don't think Snapchat was not existing.
Right.
So how did you start? What?
Well, I'm not German. So I actually arrived in Germany in 2011. And I'm originally Russian, so I have been through other countries before. And after I finished my education in Deggendorf, which is a small city in Bavaria, I was actually just looking for a job. And since I graduated from the international business, which practically means you can do any job afterwards, my first try was actually being a social media intern in a very, very small consulting in München.
I see.
And the main product of them was the Bio-Hundefutter, so it's a bio-dog's food, which I still find was a very exciting, nice experience because it was a very small business, but it was very close to the person who actually founded that company. And that was also something that I got as an opportunity. So for the first, I worked there almost a year and I did everything from content creation to management to analytics. And I was like, that doesn't seem to be so bad. And it's more or less aggregates everything what, you know, it's a combo between creativity and knowing also marketing related things. So this is how I started. It was 1 year after I finished my first internship.
So around 2014.
Yes, exactly. Okay. And then I started my job in Wirecard as a social media manager and I stayed there for 4 years.
Okay, cool. So how was it at Mytheresa? I mean, 2014, how well developed was the social media team? How big was the social media team back at the time?
There was in total 4 people.
Okay.
And I have to say those guys were good though.
Okay.
Back in the time, it wasn't so big. So Net-a-Porter name, let's say like big of e-commerce fashion names were, of course, more out there. But Mytheresa.com really, you know, they had great service to begin with. They were just a great business. Yeah. And then the marketing team, so actual marketing team, was more than 15 people.
Wow.
And then social media was on top of that, which is for other people. So I think they were already quite advanced. I mean, in that case, it's, of course, a B2C business. You have to be advanced. They already have a very, very profound Instagram strategy at place. They have been doing a lot of stuff. It was all connected to the product really well. So it was quite advanced, I would say.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So talking about social media at all, yeah, how did you perceive the change over the past years in social media? What changed when you compare it to the beginning?
To be honest, I think it's just the volume of stuff that is now on social media. It's like, because even 10 years ago, many businesses were like, okay, social media, 5 years ago, social media is still an extra. Does it really have a good ROI? Can we really get customers out there? All of that was a question mark in 2012, 100%.
Yeah.
And both for B2C and for B2B businesses, like people were just really like kind of, you know, middle area, should we go there, should we not go there? And as of today, I feel like social media is not even any longer necessarily part of marketing. It's almost a separate marketing establishment, which mm-hmm. you need to, you know, treat separately. And I think that was literally the most rapid change out there. And of course, the amount of content. Everyone creates content, not just companies, people create content. That was probably the biggest transition.
What I find pretty interesting, I mean, with My Teresa, you were in a typical B2C environment, while at Wirecard, you are at a typical B2B environment. How do you see the differences when it comes down to social media in B2B versus B2C?
I think it's generally the clarity, like where things need to be done. Like in B2C, most of the time you have a specific product and you have theoretically goal, you want to sell this product, and this product is either good or bad, it has strong and weak parts of it, you know, and building a story around a specific thing is just, I feel generally is a little bit easier task. And B2B also has different, even more level of complexity than a B2C product can have. I mean, you have kind of thousands of consumer-facing products, but all of them will be a little bit of a template, so you can try to replicate what worked for that one, might as well work for this one, especially if we were speaking about just about yeah. one business. In B2B, services can just go very far from each other. So if I take Wirecard as an example, and it's a financial industry, you know, huge portfolio, completely different clients, different businesses, and you know, and you really need to go and look specifically into every one of them, and then how do you optimize your social media strategy for that? Like, you know, you need to understand, okay, who is the biggest client group, where you get the most money, but then what do you do with the rest 50 other personas who also need to get some attention? So it's, I think in B2B area, social media need to be wired much stronger to the values of the business and, mm-hmm. and to the core value proposition of the business.
Thinking about the B2B world at Wirecard, are you using paid social just on LinkedIn, mm-hmm. what would be like my first choice probably as mm-hmm. it's a B2B network? Mm-hmm. Or are you also spending and how money on Instagram and Facebook ads or maybe Google or what else?
Right. Well, the native choice will be LinkedIn. We had a lot of debate where money should go.
Yes.
Because I do believe that B2B, your first intuitive choice, you should be on LinkedIn.
Yes.
And you should be targeting the client, like the decision maker on the other side. You
with
want
ads.
To reach out. With the ads,
yes.
Yeah. You do need to understand, or at least try to understand, what do these decision makers do in their free time? And what are their personal interests when they are not decision making around
yes.
in their company? And in that regard, Facebook, Instagram, and all other B2C facing, well, I mean, Facebook, I'm not even touching right now, but let's say Instagram, Pinterest, like those guys, you might as well try to reach out these people out there. The question is how.
Yeah.
And that's not something I believe I have was able to do, or I'm still very much in the figuring out phase. But I think, yeah, the first step, you definitely need to go a simple way, see if direct B2B platforms and solutions do work for you, as well as the ads that are really just feeding in your funnel. But you also should keep eye open for trying to go for more personal platforms like Instagram, I would say.
When it comes down to lead generation, does it work in a B2B environment, according to your experience, that you use LinkedIn for lead generation,
mm-hmm.
or do you write blog posts, or how does the marketing work in a B2B environment?
Right. So, frankly speaking, you need to be able to feed every step of the funnel, and it also includes fun stuff, like even for LinkedIn. I mean, people have this notion that LinkedIn only like business making. It's not like this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like I think for a year or so, LinkedIn also is about engagement. It gets very personal very fast as well. If we speak also about the recruitment area of using LinkedIn. happen. But generally, it's not just about lead generation, because if you, even if you have a fantastic white paper, you have a fantastic webinar, it's very rare when you're going to be able to deliver this to, let's say, people that who have never heard about your brand before, and they will just click straight away and they will give all their contact information, and then you can just feed it into your sales department. It's very, very rare when it works that way, because again, if we speak about B2B in general, where do sales happen? They happen very much on the connection based, I mean, real life connection based. They happen on the events. They happen, you know, in a very physical environment very often. So you do need still to invest to produce some sort of very engaging, very nice story to begin with that might not even be connected to your services, you know, if you just look at it for the first time. It has to catch attention. Then you run the ads, you focus on a specific target group, make sure those guys are engaging with this cool content. And only then you can try to start feeding them the middle and the end of the funnel and try to actually motivate them to sign up, to become a lead.
So as you're the head of social media, you have a team. How big is your team?
So in total, we were four people.
Four people.
Yeah.
And how can I see? I mean, most of the people who probably listen to it, they do it themselves, or they have one employee working in the social media field. Mm. How was your team structured?
Right. So as I mentioned at the beginning, like social is, if you look at the whole scope, it can get quite complex. So we generally had what I tend to think a very good split on how we divided the responsibility, because very often you also need to see what people are best at. So we definitely had a person who was very much on the paid ads analytical and as well as customer care side. That sounds weird, but this person also happened to be very, very good with numbers. Mm-hmm. So she started as a customer care and then she advanced into paid ads and analytics, as well as the monitoring and listening. So anything what is numbers related, this is one part, and I do believe it requires also a high level of seniority to deal with these things. So it's
because you also have like a huge budget to deal with, right?
Yeah, you have a lot of responsibility happening there. Yeah, and it's also responsibility to say, okay, there we put more money, and there we don't put money anymore. So you know, so this is just one person, and I was a number person of a social media hub, right? Then when I had another employee of mine, she was very good with interpersonal communication, and she very organically developed into the influencer marketing part. Mm. So she became our influencer marketing and community manager. And these two things went together really, really well. And another project that eventually, you know, didn't go that far, but was the internal corporate ambassador program. This is something where we were aiming to really, together with HR, together with employer branding people, to activate internal stakeholders, you know, and make them proper advocates of the brand. So she was, that was the second person of the hub. The third one, and that's really when we speak about content, editorial planning, content production, agency management, like there was just one person whose focus was exactly that. And then the fourth person, which is pretty much me, that was mostly the strategic input. It was the input of understanding how to manage the subsidiaries, right? Because social media is just so different when you look at Asia and then you look at the US and then Central Europe and then the African area, like it's completely different words. So subsidiary management, strategic management, and service integration, if I can say it so, because people also tend to think that social media, again, just marketing, when it's also customer care, integration within the customer care. 100%. It's also integration to the sales team, like LinkedIn Sales Navigator, for example, integration into the company. That's also a responsibility of a social media team. Not always, but it was good to, you know, have one leg in there. And stuff was on me.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You touched on influencer marketing. Mm. And for me, it's 100% clear in a B2C environment how influencer marketing works.
Yeah.
How does it work in a B2B environment?
It's tricky. It's definitely tricky. It's tricky because you don't have a product. You don't have a specific shoe or phone or whatever you want to give these people, right? And then tailor it into a Kunal Naresh narration. You don't have that. So what are you trying to look at? First of all, and that's quite interesting, very lately, there's now, there are plenty of tools of how to look for B2C influencers. Yeah. Now we also have software that actually helps to define B2B influencers.
Okay, interesting. Can you name one?
Yeah, one is very good. Her name is Analytica.
Analytica.
We didn't work with those guys so much, but we also had large benchmark done onto how do we optimize the process of, you know, influencer search, and it wasn't easy. So that was the software which I really liked, mm-hmm. and the team and everyone.
And what do they give me? I mean, the demographics or
so they give you. I wonder if I should, you know, reflect on other tools, but if I describe generally, you definitely have a great search. And by search, I mean you have filters, you have your industry, you have your niche industries like fintech, financial industry, investment, insurances, like this kind of stuff.
But what people are talking about, or do they go one step further and say what people who are following that person are interested
in? Both. They're also looking very deeply into who are the main followers, so what is the community you're going to end up addressing through these B2B influencers. They're covering it all. So it's very much the same package a B2C software for influencer marketing will give you, just focus on B2B.
Interesting.
And I think what I really find important about them is that quality. They focus on the audience quality. And I don't speak about, oh, good people, bad people. Mm-hmm. I mean about the ratios of interaction, how much audience interacts with the content, how much content the influencer end up posting on a regular basis, which topics are, you know, being touched up out there. So, yeah.
Talking about the market at large, like, can you name, like, in the B2B, it doesn't need to be in the financial industry, it can be anywhere, any good players where you say, these are companies who get social in the B2B space right.
Yeah.
And why?
If on the top of my head, I definitely can name, weird enough, BNP Paribas.
Okay.
Those guys are killing it, at least on LinkedIn, because BNP Paribas, I mean, it's a bank.
Yeah.
It's you cannot get more boring than that. I'm sorry, no offense to BNP Paribas, but we all know it's not so fun. We understand, yeah. So what they do, they actually created a scope of values, like of emotional, human-centric values as equality, female rights, LGBT, all sorts of stuff that really matters on a human side. And they're just pushing there. They are showing what sort of donations are they doing. They're showing which sorts of programs are they supporting. They're showing a lot of people who are working in BNP Paribas. And I feel like that's really good
people
way
marketing.
Of doing it. It's people marketing, because business marketing, in a sense, like, it's bank services.
Yeah.
So you
yeah.
don't want to go there.
Yes.
And so that's one of the examples, which I would say is really, really good. I mean, another one will be Accenture.
Okay.
Of course, a bit easier, because they have absolutely insane amount of very cool content, and all the researchers and everything what they have. I feel like they're very sharp on what they deliver, because there's also a wide choice. They go also for very trendy topic, for very human-centric topic, for topics that really, you know, sparkle interest, and they push that on social. And I do also find this to be very good.
Going forward, I mean, if things go wrong. Do you have like a process?
So you do need to have a crisis management plan that goes as detailed as telling you. So if A happens, there are two possibilities of what you need to do. It's either this or it's either this. Then if this happens, you need to do this thing. So it's really this yes-no roadmap, which can get quite complex. So that's why you need to have it, you know, early on. And firstly, you need to cover all the cases you are confident about. So obviously bad stuff, you know, angry customer, bad influencer, bad media, whatever that is. So first you cover the easy cases, and then you start brainstorming, okay, guys, what can else potentially ever go wrong, either in regard to our community or in regard to our services?
Yes.
And then you build on top of that.
How would I start if today would be day one?
Yeah.
And my literal process would be, because at the beginning, your biggest asset is time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of publishing tremendous amount of content,
mm-hmm.
which could be one route, that's possible, spending money on creating great content and publishing it every single day, another thing would be reaching out to companies and say, like, well, listen, that's the product.
Yeah.
That's the price.
Yeah.
That's the reason why you should care. First of all, from your own point of view, because this can go wrong. I took a look at your page and this can go wrong, right? Or I know your market. This can go wrong,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
And second, I've done it.
Yeah.
big scale.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then you can come up with different sales approaches. You could come up, the easiest would be, listen, that's the price. You don't have to pay anything. If I help you, then I want two things. First mm-hmm. of all, I want my price. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And second, I want a testimonial.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, it's on me.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest close for you.
Yeah, and by this risk. Start, it's, yeah,
right.
Sure, yeah.
If you're more about, well, I'm over this, you say, what I did at the beginning, literally that was my strategy. When I was living in Los Angeles mm-hmm. and I started consultation, mm-hmm. I was talking with a guy, Mike Stankos. He was like the CSO of one of the fastest growing companies in the US, something like Deloitte, but in a different space.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, well, listen, my best strategy for sales is the following. So like, well, listen, you go and you say, where do you stand? So you do an analysis of the current situation. And you say, okay, I understand. This will take me X weeks to fix your problem.
Mm-hmm.
It costs $5,000, mm-hmm. for example, let's name any price. You only need to pay half mm-hmm. in advance.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't like it, that's it.
Perfect offer, yeah.
That's- and if you like it, you pay the rest.
Yeah.
I like to think in I'm a big optimist.
Mm-hmm.
Even if somebody wouldn't pay me, I probably would over it and say like, okay, leave it
yeah.
and focus on the next one.
Yeah, just leave and just forget
instead
about it.
Instead of dealing
it's
with
absolutely,
lawyers
absolutely.
And
left no, the only outcome is like you just don't deal with this customer.
Exactly,
sure,
exactly.
Yeah.
And karma will deal
we'll
with it.
We'll come back
yes,
to that.
The karma will deal with it, right? That's how I believe it. That's
okay.
how I approach it.
So since we are speaking very specifically at this point
yeah.
already, you know, proposals
yeah.
and clusters.
Yeah.
So let's say you already got the customer you want and you're on a stream,
yes.
like you're getting clients again and again.
Yes.
What do you say people are most willing to pay for?
I have a very good friend of mine who always thinks in terms of how much the company could pay
right.
to align it to his prices. Well, I tell him, you are selling time. Your time is not getting more valuable by working for McDonald's. It is, to be honest, because the output is much bigger. But McDonald's won't think like that.
Yeah.
They will pay the same thing like a restaurant might pay if it's the same service. If you do a logo for a bigger brand, I mean, there are a couple of ways in how to do it. Different countries, different usage rights, and so on, right? It's very hard with services. There are startups where I believe my whole approach and how much they pay me drives them into a situation where I believe maybe they should start with something else. So I'm considering not to work with them because right now you do need to do your homework.
Yeah.
I'm not the right person to start with.
Okay.
And there are some companies I help where I think like, man, like literally like I remember like a couple of months ago, I helped an agency with a pitch.
Mm-hmm.
I received, I believe, like, I worked like a day for it. I received 1% of the value of the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
So they took my concept, they sold it, it was a big agency,
uh-huh.
and they made 100 times more of what I did the work of winning the pitch.
Yeah.
I could think of, well, that's not fair, but
yeah.
it is. Because they have different things. Now they have to do it. I wouldn't align it. I would rather go from two different sides. One side is the market.
Mm-hmm.
How much, and that's easy to find out. You just ask your competitors how much
sure,
would you
how
charge.
Sure, how much do you charge for those? Yeah,
right,
sure.
and
yeah.
you easily come to a price and you're like, that's what the market is paying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easy. That's just the price. People
yeah.
are used to that. You know how much you pay for going to the bakery or going to the hairdresser. You know these prices.
Yeah.
Some are more expensive, some are less, but nobody can doubt the price.
Mm-hmm.
The other way how to deal with this is be honest with yourself and say like, well, listen, how much did I earn in the
corporate,
past?
For example.
Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what is my value?
Right.
And as I'm a freelancer, I need to earn more,
yeah.
to be honest.
Sure. Yeah, you can, yeah.
Or you earn less because you don't have the fundamentals in terms of reviews, in terms of reputation in that field. And, you know, like in the future, I want to earn more,
mm-hmm.
right? Like talking about the big gurus and like the Grant Cardones and Frank Kearns in the US, They said, it depends. If you want to make a million, for example, you need to know that you need to make 83,000 a month. You need to make 3,500 a day. You need to make X amount of money per hour. And if you don't do this, you don't come to the amount of money.
Yeah, but there are very few people who are so ballsy to set up that sort of a...
Let's take 10% of it. Let's take you want to make 100,000. So it's 10% of the whole thing. Yeah. So you need 8,300 a month and so on, right? So it depends also what are your costs.
Yeah.
So that could be also something, how much you need to make to survive.
Yeah.
That's also one thing in doing it. So it's short thinking on the one hand to survive.
Mm-hmm.
That's the minimum. Another way could be taking a look at the market.
How much
what
you
are
can
they
leverage
asking,
more.
Yeah. Right? And the second one is, of course, and that's the hardest one, to understand the output. It's easy if I tell you, well, listen, I can save you 10,000 euro. Do you pay me 5? No brainer, right? Or if you do this, it will make you earn 10,000 more. Would you pay me 5?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there are so many ways in how to approach it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the biggest fan in a mix of it.
Mm-hmm.
There should be one part of the equation which is fixed, that you survive.
Retainer,
yes. And another thing could be variable.
Yeah.
Depending on how good you are.
Sure.
Find your best client.
Yeah.
Don't try to sell everyone.
Yeah, no. Okay.
Don't try to please everyone. Especially at the beginning, we are so inclined to try to say yes to every client. And we lose so much time by not being 100% focused on your own mission statement.
Yeah.
I believe a very good task is to write down your principles. Because then you say, okay, now I close it. I'm on holidays, I'm not doing social.
Yeah.
Some people do, right? Some people say, I don't have that, right? But then, and this should be the same thing with finding the right client. Like having your principles and saying, for example, I don't take a Google client because I don't know about it. Maybe I could help. And I'm not a big fan. A friend of mine says, like, as long as you know it better than the person in front of you, you already help them, which is true. But then again, it takes a bigger amount of your energy and the complexity of everything to deal with. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Focus on the things you know best.
Yeah.
I mean, I believe the best advice, that's why I'm repeating it over and over again, is really asking yourself, who's your perfect client? And write that down and find these.
Yeah.
Because then it has focus has many advantages, especially in the beginning. First of all, let's take an example for me. Let's say I only want to work with hairdressers.
Mm-hmm.
I only do social media for hairdressers. So now I know which events, conferences I have to go to. I know which magazines I have to advertise.
You know which groups on social to look for.
I know which groups on social. I know which social media profiles I have to take a look at.
Mm-hmm.
I can think about 50 ideas that help hairdressers. I'm very focused, very narrowed down. I will easily get testimonials from hairdressers, which then again helps me with my market with hairdressers, right? So starting with one industry and one, maybe I do just Instagram profile hairdressers.
Mm-hmm.
I'm only optimizing Instagram profiles for hairdressers.
Yeah.
And then the service will be Alex helped me with my Instagram profile for my hair salon, right? I get all these reviews about it. I know all the objections of the people about it. I can give tons of examples what I've done in the past. It makes things so much easier than if I start with a hairdresser and next time I do a restaurant and then I do a gym, right? And then after five gyms, I get the first testimonial for a gym. So then I can actually showcase something.
Mm-hmm.
So really narrowing it down is a very good, very first step. What else on the list?
To be honest, there was more than I was ever expecting to know. To be honest, I just have one final probably question. So we met in San Diego a few years ago and you were a speaker at pretty much one of the biggest conferences out there within the social media marketing industry globally. Not Europe, not everywhere, globally. How did you get there?
Well, it's a mix between being at the right time, at the right place, when it comes down to Periscope.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I start with Periscope on day one.
Yep.
I was the first one in Europe who reached like 50,000 and 100,000 followers, which built me a brand. Mm-hmm. I lived in Los Angeles, which is close to San Diego.
Okay.
And I attended the conference, first of all.
Okay.
So yeah, I would, the conferences you want to speak at, you should attend.
Yeah, first and foremost.
Yes, you should attend. You should talk to the speakers. Maybe beforehand, text the speakers, say, well, listen, can we maybe meet for a coffee?
Yeah.
Yes, to see. Because all of them, of course, know the host and they might make you an intro.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It was really nice. Thank you so much. It was great. Yeah.
Awesome.